Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
In today's episode, we sit down with a local mom, Tiffany Stafford, for some real talk about one of the most difficult issues parents face, how to talk to your kids about handicaps, disabilities, people who are different. Spoiler alert, the only real wrong way to do it is to not do it at all.
Whew, that's some heavy stuff. Later, we're going to lighten things up a bit with a brand new drink creation from the baristas at Cutsforth's Thriftway.
But first, the news.
You wouldn't call it much ado about nothing, but the hearing of Project Shakespeare before the Canby Planning Commission on Monday night went about as smoothly as anyone would have hoped for. After 3 hours of testimony from planning staff, the development team, and local residences and property owners, the commission voted unanimously to approve the proposed 531,000 square foot beverage distribution facility, which will house 275 employees and virtually round-the-clock operations for a tenant whom developers still decline to reveal. However, the developer Trammell Crow Company in Portland has worked with a few companies you may have heard of. Here's one of their principals.
Industrial Steve development Siegel. Is our specialty. We're the most active industrial developer in the Portland Metro. And we have wonderful clients that we have serviced here, including Boeing, Nike, Subaru, and Amazon. I wanted to give you an idea of the types of groups we are lucky enough to work with, and the tenant proposed for this site is no different.
Siever said the tenant will be signing a 15-year lease for the site and is relocating the operations of three Portland metro area warehouses to this facility. The staffing level of 275 breaks out to approximately 140 in distribution for the drivers, 110 in the warehouse operations, and 45 in the office space. I realize that does add up to 275, but that is what he said and what Frankie wrote down. Siever also shed light on a year-long competition that has largely taken place behind the scenes. It can be vying for this project among the likes of Portland, Gresham, Sherwood, and Hillsborough. Obviously, Canby won.
And I will share what is maybe not commonly known is that over the last year, the city of Canby has been in a competition for this business, and you won. Last spring, the tenant began its study for this new facility. It considered multiple cities in the metro region. Included in this site selection competition were sites in Portland, Gresham, Sherwood, and Hillsborough. There were several factors for why the tenant chose this site, including the property characteristics, the location, and the perception that Canby is a business-friendly city.
Many of the concerns expressed by the staff, residents, and Planning Commission members centered on increased traffic, trucks, routes, and whether they would be adhered to, and the somewhat less than superb condition of some of the roads surrounding the development. In the end, all the commissioners expressed support for the project, mainly citing the number of jobs the development would bring to Canby, which would make it probably the city's largest year-round employer in terms of for-profit businesses. Conditions for the project include that the developer cover 5% of the cost of the new traffic signal in the intersection of Sequoia Parkway and Hazel Dell Way, and their truck drivers follow the prescribed truck routes contained in the city's transportation plan. Siever said construction is expected to begin this spring and will take approximately 12 months, with the opening of the facility anticipated for summer of 2020. First-term House Representative Christine Drazen of Canby was sworn in this week before a standing-room-only crowd at the Oregon State Capitol building. She took her oath of office along with the rest of the House delegation as the 2019 legislative session got officially underway on Monday morning. She also got to say her first words in open session.
The chair recognizes Ms. Drazen.
Mr. Speaker, I move that a three-member committee on permanent organization and order of business be appointed.
Ms. Drazen moves that a committee of three be appointed on permanent organization and order of business. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion carried.
Representative Drazen is a former member of the Canby School District Budget Committee and has also served on the Clackamas County Planning Commission. She campaigned on a platform of improving high school graduation rates and reforming the state's spending and budgeting process. In her first term, she has been appointed to serve on the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education, the House Committee on Economic Development, and the House Committee on Healthcare. Drazen's district, District 39, includes Canby and parts of unincorporated Clackamas County east of Oregon City, Gladstone, and Clackamas. For photos of the ceremony, please see our website, canbynowpod.com.
Clackamas County shared the results of its six-month-long study on the future of the Canby Ferry with a packed crowd at Canby Foursquare Church on Tuesday night. Canby Ferry is an important part of the area's culture and history, but its efficiency and fit in a 21st century transportation system leaves much to be desired, hence the study. The county looked at four main alternatives for the future: keeping the ferry, discontinuing it, building a bridge without a toll, and building a bridge with a toll. The county presented a wealth of information in their hour-long presentation, including an in-depth analysis of the traffic patterns for the area and how they would be affected by a new bridge, tolled or untolled. The bottom line is that continuing operations of the ferry for another 25 years will cost the county over $16 million, while a toll bridge was the only one of the four alternatives that would come close to breaking even financially. So what's the problem? Many of the area's residents don't want a bridge. Some even showed up to the meeting Tuesday night carrying signs to that effect. They feared the rural roads that connect the ferry, which currently see an average of a few hundred cars a day, wouldn't be able to handle traffic counts of 10 times that or more, which is what the county expects should a bridge be built at the Canby Ferry location. The decision ultimately rests with the County Board of Commissioners. We'll get our first hint of which direction they might be leaning on January 30th when they receive the same report residents heard Tuesday night. The most important opportunity for citizen comment will be on February 19th at 6 p.m. back at Canby Foursquare. This will be the public's chance to let commissioners know what they think should be done. The final decision is expected in March. In sports this week, the Canby boy basketball team went 1-2 in the opening rounds of league play, beating Lake Ridge 64-58 at home while falling to Tigard and Oregon City. They stand at 6-8 overall. They'll hit the road for their next challenge as they take on the 6-7 Westland Lions on Friday. The girls had a rougher start, dropping all three of their league games, part of a brutal 8-game losing streak they've endured since starting the season 4-2. They'll have a chance to break that streak Friday as they also face West Lynn at home. Catch the action starting at 7 p.m. Go Cougars!
It's my favorite segment of the week. Police beat for the week of December 25th through December 31st. On December 25th, good old Merry Christmas at 8:52 p.m. when I was getting all of my presents, police witnessed a driver speed through a red light on Arndt Road and then swerve into oncoming traffic before drifting back over to the right shoulder. He came to a halt in front of the Canby patrol car, which was performing an unrelated traffic stop. Officers found an open container of alcohol in his vehicle, and he was cited for driving under the influence. Looks like he was doing his own Christmas party. On December 26th at 2 p.m., oh my God, it has happened again. A resident called police to report a package containing a brand new iPhone that he had not ordered. He said an account had also been opened fraudulently in his name. On December 27th at 10:22 p.m., police responded to a vehicle that had crashed into a residence on Northwest 6th Avenue. While officers were interviewing the people involved, the car began to smoke and the battery ignited. The car then exploded into a huge slow-motion mushroom cloud as the officers walked away coolly, throwing their sunglasses on and saying, "Guess it's time to get new double A's." No, that was a terrible joke. Just kidding. It's not an action movie. The officers extinguished the fire in the battery and helped the family push the vehicle to where it could be towed. On December 29th at 1:18 p.m., an officer conducting a traffic stop on Southeast First Avenue had to dive for cover as a passing vehicle struck his patrol car from behind with enough force to push it into the stopped vehicle ahead. Man, there are a lot of bad drivers in this episode. The driver was cited for driving under the influence, obviously. Several burglaries were reported later that night. At 4:24 a.m., officers responded to North Elm Street on a report of a burglary in process, but it appeared the suspects had left when the homeowners had woken up. At 6:01 a.m., reports of a burglary on Southeast 17th, which had apparently happened while the victims were sleeping. The suspects had gained access through an unlocked door. Another was reported on Southeast 15th Court. In this case, the entry had been gained through a key the suspects had found in an unlocked vehicle parked outside of the residence. Finally, on December 31st at 5:15 p.m., officers stopped a pedestrian who had stumbled into moving traffic on Highway 99E. Yeah, I guess it was a little early, but maybe he was celebrating New Year's Eve. The man was arrested for being under the influence and in possession of alcohol, a violation of his probation. His probation? Yeah, he was on probation for a DUI. True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real life human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Trees by Joyce Kilmer. Read by Ed Grotsky.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the sweet earth flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. Upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lived with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree.
This is also Ellie. You're both named Ellie. What do you think of that?
Cool.
Yeah? Can you say hi? Oh, they're holding hands already. So sweet.
She's been very excited.
Yeah, so has mine.
What's her name?
Ellie.
Yeah. Oh, they're hugging. Oh my gosh. What do you think of that, Ellie? Ellie, tell Ellie that you've seen her pictures and her videos.
I saw your pictures and your videos.
Are you excited?
Yeah.
Yeah? You think it's cool that you guys have the same name?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Can you ask Ellie how old she is?
You're so cool.
Say, how old are you?
How old are you? I'm boy.
Where are you girls going? You want to go upstairs?
Yeah. Okay, well, you girls have fun.
I'm like this.
Ellie, do you want to go upstairs and see Ellie's room? Got lots of dollies.
So what are you guys going to do up there? Ellie, what are you going to do in your room? They're just going. Yeah, they're not even talking to me anymore. But, yep. Okay, so I'm sitting here with Tiffany Stafford. She's the mother of Ellie, a model, and just all-around awesome five-year-old, and her two older brothers, Will and Luke. Tiffany is also an advocate for children with Down syndrome and their families, and one of the co-founders of the Down Syndrome Diagnosis Network, which is for expectant moms or new mothers of children with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. So Tiffany, we're going to talk about all of that, but first I just wanted to talk a little bit about what just happened with our two Ellies meeting. We've been planning this out for a while.
Yeah, it was a magical moment.
Yeah, you were actually one of the first people I ever reached out to when I had this idea for a podcast. I really wanted to have you on, and it's taken like months before it's finally.
It's hard to coordinate. It is. We have kids and jobs.
You have kids and jobs and everything, and you guys live way out here in Aurora. So.
Yeah.
but we wanted to do something kind of different with this show. Building it around a play date with our two daughters.
Yes.
Your Ellie is almost six. Yep. My Ellie is four. And really, obviously, we're going to be talking about Down syndrome because that's kind of your story and your experience. But really, for me, even though this was my idea, it was really terrifying to set this up because it's really just about how to talk to your kids about differences, you know, in general.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's can be kind of difficult waters to navigate.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
So when Ellie was three, she started preschool
mm-hmm.
and went to a special ed preschool. She wasn't walking.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't walk till she was three and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to a special ed preschool, which was great. It was a really small class, got her used to school.
Yeah.
And when she was four, she went into mainstream preschool, and we thought she was just going to rock it because she's very social and loving and sweet. And
she really is.
Yeah, she's doing great.
Well, she just met my daughter for the first time, and like within 10 seconds was giving her a hug.
Yeah,
so.
they instantly loved each other. It was perfect. And so when Ellie started preschool, I kind of just figured everything was going great until we had a meeting about a month in. And
it was
teacher,
you and the teacher?
It was me and the teacher and her whole team. So she has a big team. She's an occupational therapist, speech therapist, physical therapist. There's a behavior specialist. There's all kinds of people when you have a child.
This feels like a government team that's like built to stop an asteroid or something.
Yes,
you've got like a scientist
kind of
and a geologist.
It feels that way.
Okay.
So it's a room full of people talking about a child.
Yes.
And so they brought me in kind of just to touch base on how it was going. Mm-hmm. And I found out that Ellie had no friends and that she was playing alone. And I was kind of blindsided.
Yeah.
And so I went home and I kind of really thought about it. She did fine in her preschool for special ed preschool, but when it came to her mainstream preschool, I think the kids just didn't understand her. And so I went into the class and read a book called 47 Strengths, which you've read to your girl.
Yeah.
And I kind of just told the class about Ellie and what it means to have Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And those kids took it to heart. I mean, it was like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
I told the kids, you know, it might be harder for Ellie to talk.
Yeah.
And she might walk a little different, but that doesn't mean that, you know, she's different than you. You guys all like the same things and like playing with toys and like learning. And so it was literally like night and day. They ended up helping Ellie. If Ellie didn't want to come in from recess, she would have buddies come and help her, or she'd help be the line leader and things like that. And so once she started getting involved and the kids understood her and maybe why she did things different, they totally embraced her. So it was amazing to watch. And so now that she's in kindergarten, it just continues to get better and better, I feel like, because everyone knows her now. And every year I'm going to go in and talk to the class, and it just makes it, I think with kids, they're just curious and they are honest. They'll say, why is she walk like that? You know, and Ellie has some hip things that aren't necessarily related to Down syndrome, but it changes her gait a little bit. And so they, sorry, you hear
that? Yeah, no, it's fine. They're playing with the toy vacuum up there, if you guys hear that weird noise. But yeah, so is it sort of, as much talking to the kids as it is kind of talking to the adults as well?
Absolutely.
Like even the teachers that deal with kids all the time, I feel like maybe they had difficulty when kids would have that question, you know, why does she look like that? Or
yes,
why does she talk like that?
Absolutely.
I think that for me, like my difficulty in sort of talking to my kids about differences, obviously not my 2-year-old as much, but with Ellie, it's like, how do you talk about it in a positive way?
Yeah.
You know, because I think the tendency is like, just don't talk about it
because
you're too afraid to like say
Absolutely.
Something that's not positive. So you just don't talk about it and feel like you're being positive, but you're really not. Like, how do you talk about it in a way that's both positive and meaningful, has some kind of meaning to it that the kids can then go with. So.
And that's what I appreciated about you, is you were asking me how to approach it with your daughter, and I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. So the book.
The book was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I see a little Ellie.
We've got one of the Ellies back.
Hi, honey.
Hey, sweetie. What are you doing?
I got to go potty.
You need to go potty? We're going to take a quick break then. So 20 minutes later, we are back. So, so just revisiting what we were just starting to talk about, I asked you to give me some advice about mm-hmm. talking to my daughter about Down syndrome and then around the idea of doing a play date. So in the hopes that this would possibly be a little instructive for other parents who might be in a situation like that. So what did you tell me?
Well, I told you first off, thank you for asking because I think a lot of parents feel awkward and they try
to
tell
their kids. It was a little awkward.
And they'll tell their kids like, don't stare or don't look or... Because you can tell sometimes...
Don't ask that question.
Yeah, don't ask that question because why does she look like that or why does she do that? And and it's okay because kids are super honest. So they just say what they see.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. I think it's great because it opens up conversation. But as parents...
A couple days ago, Ellie asked me why my boobs are so small. Which I guess is sort of a compliment.
These are pecs.
Yeah, right. Been working out, that's why.
Kid. That is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, kids are honest. And so it's okay if the kids have questions and just don't be afraid to ask other parents that do have kids with disabilities, you know, like how would you like me to approach this with my child?
And I think the fear there is that the parent might be offended or whatnot, but
yeah. And I've read a lot about other, kids with facial deformities because that's a hard one for parents. Because like we've seen kids out with facial deformities and other kids pointing and saying stuff, and I feel bad because it's okay to ask questions and to just say, go say hi. It's okay. Because I think teaching our kids that being different is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's normal. It's part of being human. Yeah. And if we were all the same, life would be boring. That's kind of what I tell my kids. So, it's just letting your kids ask the questions and don't shush them.
Yeah,
And reach out to other parents if you're not sure how to answer it. But I feel like just knowledge is the biggest part. With the kids and the teachers even. Because after I went to the preschool class, one of the teachers reached out to me and said, I didn't even know some of these things about Down syndrome with the low tone. And that's why, their speech is delayed or...
The muscle tone.
Yeah, because it affects every muscle, including their tongue.
Yeah.
So...
I wanted to share just some things that my Ellie said over the past few weeks as we've been getting ready for this. And we did get a copy of the book, 47 Strings. So this is a children's book written by a mom of three kids. I think at the time she just had two, one of whom had Down syndrome. And so basically the story is a letter to her son about her daughter who has Down syndrome.
Yeah, I think it was to her daughter. Because I think the son is the newest baby.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Becky
well,
Carey.
Some kid to some kid. No. But it was very, very helpful. And it talks about DNA as the strings.
Yeah.
So my daughter, with the first night that we read the book, we talked about Ellie. I showed her some pictures and some video from your Instagram. And she was talking about, Ellie, that she thinks she's so cool and so pretty and, was really excited to meet her. I didn't tell her her name because I thought that would be cool to tell her the day of that they have the same name. So we did the story. And then later she was going to bed and she's like, Dad, how many strings does she have? So, like, she remembered, she made that connection, but she didn't remember the number. So I told her, your new friend, she has 47 strings. And she says, wow, she must really like strings, huh?
That is so cute. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love it.
So yeah, I mean, like I guess so, because that's more than we have. So.
Yeah.
One extra
string.
That's so cute. There's another thing she said, over the weeks, like as we were rereading the story and stuff, she said, I have Down syndrome to herself. She said, I have Down syndrome, but I don't have 47 strings. That's Ellie talking about herself.
So cute.
Yeah. So like not quite getting it yet. gosh. hopefully everything's okay up there. She did ask, she did say, like I said, several times she's so pretty but she would ask, why is her face like that?
Mm-hmm.
So because you would kind of coach me through that, we were able to talk just about differences and I felt a lot more comfortable sort of having clearance to answer that question,
absolutely.
And not to say, don't ask that, or that's a bad question,
yes.
Which I might've done otherwise. And then your Ellie loves to sing, so we found some videos of her singing.
Nice.
And the last thing that Ellie said was, I like to sing too, but I'm not good at singing with Down syndrome. So,
oh my gosh. What that means, but, I love it. Your Ellie is so cute.
Yeah, super cute.
I love what kids say. Not when they do that,
though. No, that's no fun. I always, if there's not a follow-up scream, I assume it's okay.
Yeah, so
if
or a bang or right, something.
Right, if there's just one kid screaming,
then
that's fine.
This is just the soundtrack of our life right now.
Okay, so before Ellie was born, you actually thought it was your middle son, Luke, who was going to have Down syndrome, because you and your husband both had this dream set independent of each other.
Yes.
And
about that one.
About that one. And then there were sort of some tests that seemed to indicate...
When I was pregnant with my second child, Luke...
Mm-hmm. Whom you hear on the background there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the cause of the screaming right
yes.
now. So I was pregnant with Luke, and I had a dream about a little girl with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And in my dream, I knew she was my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so I went in for the gender ultrasound at 20 weeks, and we found out that the baby had two markers for Down syndrome. And so when they told me that, I kind of assumed that he had it, because I didn't know why I even dreamt about that diagnosis.
I'm a prophet.
I was like, I didn't know anybody with Down syndrome. Yeah. And it kind of scared me.
Yeah.
And my husband and I decided to have an amnio, so we knew what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
And the results came back, and he did not have Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And so I called my husband to tell him the results, but then said, I need to tell you about my dream because it was so real.
Yeah.
And he said, are you kidding me? Because he had had a dream about a little girl with Down syndrome.
Wow.
And they're standing in a football game, holding hands, watching a football game.
So, yeah.
So I made the comment, let's be done having kids and be grateful to have two healthy babies, which makes me feel guilty for saying that. But
no, thank you for admitting that, for sure. For
when
sure.
You're pregnant, that's all you want. Is your baby to be healthy. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And
that's
so
why
then,
we have those tests, you know.
Exactly.
So we know what we're doing. Yeah. With. Yeah.
And then when I was pregnant with Ellie, I had a test called the Maternity 21.
What's the difference?
What?
What's the age difference between Luke
and
Ellie?
So when Ellie was born, Luke was 3.
Okay.
And turning 4.
Yeah. So you did have the testing done.
Yeah, I had a blood test done. Yeah. And they said negative. It's 99% effective, and it was new at the time. The Maternity 21 was new back in whatever year that was, 2012 when I had it.
Yeah.
And so they gave me the results and said, we're all clear, everything's good. We had no markers in utero.
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, and so the day she was born, they told my husband about 5 minutes after she came out that she had Down syndrome.
It wasn't until she was actually born that you knew. Yeah.
And so I said, no, I had that test, and they said it was 99%, unless we're that random 1%. But come to find out, it was human error. They actually never ran the test.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I feel like everything kind of happened the way it was meant to. My husband reminded me about our dreams, and we dreamed her into reality, I guess.
Yeah. What was that moment like when you had this expectation, obviously, that that you didn't have to worry about that, and then you find out, you know, there's all this feelings of just having
a
baby.
It was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot to take in. I say we grieved. I say we grieved for about 24 hours.
Yeah.
The idea of who Ellie was supposed to be. Jesse says it was 48.
Yeah. Okay.
But then once we, you know,
it's just a small disagreement.
More, the biggest part, the grieving part for me was more of how others were going to treat her, because I loved her so much the minute I met her. And it was the fear of what everyone else would, you know, say or do.
So tell me about the Down syndrome diagnosis network, your experience with Ellie and kind of that completely unexpected thing that came out literally 5 minutes, you know, after she was born, changes your whole, you know, preparation and everything that you think you're getting yourself into. Was part of the inspiration for this network to help support other moms and other parents that are in this situation.
Jesse and I spent many hours on Google.
Yeah.
Because I honestly did not know one person with Down syndrome when Ellie was born.
Hmm.
And I had no idea. I mean, my husband's reading off stats to me in the hospital, like, someday Ellie, the average height of a woman with Down syndrome is 4'9". And I was like, really? I had no idea.
Oh my gosh.
And I envision my boys in her when they're grown.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be 6'4", probably, is what you're saying. I'm like, they're going to be so cute together.
Right, right.
And so we were learning from the internet.
Going to be like on their shoulders or something. Yeah,
seriously. It was a scary thing, though, to reach out on Google. And, I mean, there's so much stuff and scary stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of it probably not helpful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I went to Baby Center, which is like a pregnancy website, mm-hmm. and they have little forums in there, and there's okay. a Down syndrome one.
Okay.
So I reached out on there and connected with some other moms that had just had babies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls, her name's Jen Jacob, she said, why don't we take this to Facebook and make a private group so we can share pictures and things that's not, you know, public on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, okay. So it ended up about 140 moms were in this one group, mm-hmm. and all of our babies were born in 2012 and 2013. And it started from there. And then Jen Jacob and another gal named Heather Bradley
yeah.
joined together to create the Down Syndrome Diagnosis Network. Mm-hmm. And it, in the beginning, I helped with the support groups
yeah.
on Facebook. And so every time a baby was born, we'd get the mom into a group. Or yeah. if a woman was pregnant, and we'd get her in the pregnancy group.
Okay.
And now we have over 7,000 families mm-hmm. in our network.
Yeah.
And I've stepped away from helping directly just because of life.
Yeah.
And
sure.
the new moms coming in are taking on the role of support. And they, I think they have 100-something people
yeah.
that are volunteers.
Yeah. What are some of the benefits that you see from that kind of community forming? Why do you think it's so helpful?
It's definitely, it's changing the conversation.
Mm.
So when a baby's born,
yeah.
a lot of people get, I'm so sorry, I have some news for you. And now I feel that, and DSDN's goal is to inform, connect, and support moms.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are trying to help with that conversation
yeah.
at the medical level. So they even have brochures for hospitals.
Gotcha.
Or for like welcome baskets for local Down syndrome orgs.
Is it just to change it and make it more positive? That
yeah.
it's not like this is the end of the world type
exactly.
thing?
Okay. And like connecting with a family.
Yeah.
Maybe if they get a prenatal diagnosis, to connect with an actual family living with
gotcha.
The diagnosis.
Yeah.
To see it's not the end of the world.
Right.
And
I imagine that must be just because when you're thrown for that loop, you're just like, how are we going to deal with this? But to
yeah.
see it modeled, like, we have a daughter with Down syndrome.
Exactly.
You know, she's 5 years old. She's awesome.
Yeah.
I bet that's so encouraging.
The things I thought in the moment they told me.
You feel like you're not alone.
I can't even believe
yeah.
like, the weird thoughts I had.
Oh, okay.
Just,
like what?
It was almost like a car wreck, like slow motion where you have so many thoughts in one moment. I
yeah.
thought, Jessie will never walk her down the aisle, which is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, she already has boyfriends. I'm like,
yeah.
you're not going to have an issue in that
she's
area.
She's a model.
Yeah, exactly. She has boys all over that love her.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to have a boyfriend and a husband someday. I'm
yeah.
not worried about that anymore.
Yeah.
I worried about that I would have to quit
I'd
my job.
I'd be more worried she just has one boyfriend.
Exactly.
Yeah. try and get the monogamy going. Yeah.
yeah. I thought I would have to quit my job. I thought
yeah.
all these things that were not true.
Yeah.
So I think just having a positive outlook and just having up-to-date and current information, some of the brochures they gave us were from the 80s.
Mm.
And in yeah. 19, in the early 80s, the life expectancy of someone with Down syndrome, it was 25.
Yeah.
And now it's 60 and going up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that...
25?
25 in the 80s.
That's only 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was alive back then.
Yeah.
Like,
or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So it's pretty... like, the old materials and
yeah.
stuff need to just be ditched.
Yeah.
And it just needs to be up to date and current and
yeah.
real.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, once I started meeting families that had kids with Down syndrome, I'm like, oh, their lives are just normal. Like,
cool.
yeah, it's like we have fun. We do normal things.
Yeah.
Like, it is harder with school, I'll admit.
Yeah.
I just drop my boys off and don't have to worry about it.
Right.
But with Ellie, she has this giant team that
yeah.
we have to talk about her for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
but
pull
so
the team
far,
together.
So good.
Yeah.
yeah. So far, so good.
Cool. Well, that's about all the time we have. Is there any sort of last thought that you might want to leave this conversation with? Or
I just want to thank you for reaching out because
yeah.
I think it's such a great thing to talk about with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid to ask other parents or just to be open with your kids about differences.
For sure.
Because differences are good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's we're all human.
Yeah.
Disability is natural.
Yeah.
I have an uncle that was disabled at 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up with him. And then I have a brother with a disability. And now I have my daughter.
Yeah.
So I've been around it my whole life. So to me, it's not awkward or weird
yeah.
or anything. It's just part of life.
Yeah.
And so I think just to have that conversation, not be afraid.
Yeah. And to make it something positive. Like you
yeah.
said, I love what you said earlier. But just like things would be so boring if we were all
totally.
The same. You know,
it
this is what
be.
Makes life fun.
Yes,
so.
Exactly.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you for the work that you do and for obviously for being on the show, opening up your house and dealing with my children. So,
well, thanks for dealing with mine.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
Fun.
No, this has been really fun. And it is cool because, like, this is just normal kid stuff, you know?
Yep.
Like, with the fear of, like, oh, this Down syndrome, you know, whatever.
Yep.
That we're mostly just dealing with normal stuff that parents deal with. So.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I think
sure.
the Ellies are friends now.
I think so.
What do you think, Ellie?
She's not sure, but I think they are.
Yeah.
We got some pictures.
We got some cute pictures.
We got some pictures. We'll share it through our social stuff. So. Cool. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Frankie.
And we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm here at Cutsforth Thriftway Coffee Shop. Is there like a special name for it beyond that?
Just Cutsforth Espresso, Cutsforth Market Espresso, even kind of going under.
Yeah, you guys are hearing Lucy Yazzolino. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. You nailed it.
And she's the chief creative officer of the espresso shop here, right? That's your title that I gave you, right?
Yep, there you go. I'll take it. It sounds fancy.
Yeah. Well, you need a fancy title for this fancy drink. You guys are doing a new thing where you're doing a new drink every month, right?
Yes. So we started that in December because we kind of thought for the holiday season, it'd be fun to have like a specialty drink. So we brought out our peppermint bark mocha and that was a hit. So we decided this is something we should stick with, kind of inspire people to try new drinks. Yeah. And then it's all gone from there.
Did people like it because of the taste or just that it was something new and unique as well?
You know, they really love the taste. And so we set the bar high at first and we're like, shoot, now we got to keep it going. But
yeah, with peppermint, that's hard to top.
Well,
it
was with real candy canes too.
Oh my gosh.
So, but we have so many flavors and that's one of the most like enjoyable things about working this coffee shop actually is being able to mess around with all those flavors.
Yeah, you have the rack of all the, is it, Torralino or?
Torrani.
Torrani. But yes. You've got like 50 different flavors to experiment with.
There's about 40, and like 20 are sugar-free, which a lot of coffee shops don't have.
Right.
And so it's really great for people being able to like customize their own drink, but then you have some people that just are lost and they stare at the wall of syrups.
Too
and
many
so
options.
This kind of helps them. Yeah,
helps direct them.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about this month's drink. It's hard, like obviously with Christmas and sometimes you can kind of go with the season. January doesn't really have a flavor.
No,
so.
Yeah. And you know, for a while we had our Jack Frost coffee, which was just drip coffee. And so we didn't want to, you know, step on Jack Frost toes.
Right. He would get mad.
Yeah. We can't do that.
Yeah.
And so we came up with just some random ones. And one of the biggest questions that I got about the peppermint bark was if it was available sugar-free.
Okay.
So I wanted to kind of keep that with everybody's New Year's resolutions, keep that an option.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is available sugar-free, but this is our Irish Stud, and it's vanilla bean, Irish cream, and coconut.
Yeah.
And then it's got a toasted coconut topping and whipped cream, of course.
Named after Michael Fassbender, I think.
You nailed it. Well, you know, the best part is I was trying to come up with something fun because I wanted to get people talking about not only the drink, but the name as well, since it's got Irish in it. So who doesn't want to start their new year off with an Irish stud?
Maybe straight men, I don't know.
You never know. We don't ask personal questions like that.
Yeah, right, exactly. You don't ask that at the coffee shop.
No, that's not like a requirement
probably
to order the drink.
Probably a good idea, cool, but I was interested in sitting down with you and hearing, you know, and I think we'll revisit this, you know, when you come up with new drinks, but just the flavors, like I love coconut, love Irish cream, so that's what intrigued me about the taste. Have you been getting a good response from people?
Yes. You know, I was a little nervous that it wouldn't reach kind of the same response as the peppermint bark.
Yeah,
since people loved it so much. But this is awesome. And actually, when I first made it, I don't drink milk. So I used almond milk.
Okay.
So it makes a huge difference in the taste. So I thought it was good with almond milk. And I just, you know, gave the list. And then I took a chance and tried it with just 2% the other day. And I was like, oh my goodness, wow, we really did something with this one.
Yeah.
But it's, it's one of my favorite drinks now.
Awesome. Okay, well, I'm going to try it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah,
it's
the flavors,
creamy,
it's really creamy. The flavors work together really well. The coconut comes through really strong, which is always tough because it's a more subtle flavor.
It is, yes.
Yeah, so you balance that really well. Nice. Well, I love that you guys are doing something creative and unique to your shop, like
Thank
on
you.
A monthly basis. I think that's really cool. And like I said, we'll probably do this again sometime. It was really fun.
You'll have to stop by next month. We actually already have our drink decided.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be
a big reveal. Are you going to tell me now?
Yep.
Okay,
I can tell you now. You'll be showcased first by you guys.
So we're going to get the scoop.
Yes. It's going to be a salted caramel breve.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to have actually sea salt on top.
Okay.
And we've got a salted caramel drizzle, so.
Yeah, I will have to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
I love salted caramel.
Well,
so.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Ellie and Tiffany, and of course, Ellie also. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook iTunes, and your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
On our next show, we sit down with the Reverend Chuck Curry, University Chaplain and Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Pacific University, to discuss the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the enduring relevance of his message.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, canbenowpod.com.